Good morning. Senate Finance is in order. And we're joined today by Co-Chair Wilkin, Senator Dyson, Olson, Hoffman, Bundy, and myself, Green. We have a couple of pieces of legislation that we've heard before, and are going to take a look at the CSs this morning. And then we'll recess until this afternoon for a hearing, or actually an informational meeting we'll be having at 1:30 on some oil presentation on the petroleum profit tax. Senator Wilkin, anything for the good of the order?
No, ma'am. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Okay, the first we have up today is Representative Harris's House Bill 217, and we have before us a CS. Senator Wilkin, would you like to move and explain the...
Madam Chair, I would move that the committee adopt Senate Committee Substitute for House Bill 217, Finance Version G, as in Gulf.
And I'll object just for explanation.
Thank you. Madam Chair and the committee, if they would turn to page 2, lines 7 through 10, we inserted, starting in, with the words "and based on," the ability for the state assessor to go to those areas that don't have property taxes, and every 2 years do a modeling, which they do today, of the value of that area to determine the 4 mil requirement, and then every 4 years to do a thorough assessment, just as they had done at Delta last year, and are in the process of doing Lake and Penn borough today. So that's the changes. That would assure that every 4 years we do the analysis, that in the rest of the state it's done by willing buyers and sellers in the free market. That's how we establish our property values in the rest of the boroughs. This mechanism would ensure that those properties in those 4 boroughs and 9 first-class cities that don't have that mechanism to establish and validate property values are done so through the assessor's office. And with that came a fiscal note of $98,000 to assist Mr. Van Zandt in that effort. So I'd be available for questions. Thank you.
Are there any questions? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question, I guess, I see where Senator Wilkin is going, trying to get the level playing field between those school districts that tax on a property tax basis and those that do otherwise, such as payment in lieu of taxes, such as in the Northwest Arctic Borough. And I understand that these districts also will have the benefits of only having to come up with the 50% of the annual increase for taxation, and the state would pick up the difference. Is that correct, Gary?
Yes, under current law, as the assessed value increases, the burden of that assessed value is shared by the state and the local assessed community.
So I guess my question is, we did the 50% evaluation payment in 174 and 01, and now we're taking the next step to address those school districts that use other than their increased valuation, other than property tax. The third leg that is out there is the unorganized areas of the state that the federal government comes up with and pays the state of Alaska payment in lieu of taxes and impact aid. And I'm wondering, is it our intent as a state to make that as the next step, do the evaluations out there, and the state pick up 50% of the increased value of federal lands as well, so that, as your statement yesterday, so that everybody is being treated equally? Is that the intent, so that one day all of us will the state would be treating all lands and property taxes for payment of education equally.
The this bill doesn't contemplate anything having to do with federal land, and PL 874 money, the impact money, is distributed across the state depending on, of course, federal land that's not taxable. And some would want to think that those areas of the state that are unorganized and forego their 90%, that's local contribution. It's not. That's a discussion for perhaps another day. But this bill doesn't have anything to do with federal land. And it's not on my radar screen to do anything with federal, with 874 money.
Well, I guess it's my interpretation that this is payment in lieu of taxes. Similarly, with the example I used earlier in Red Dog, they have an agreement that they have payment in lieu of taxes, and it's used for education. I don't see the difference between lands, whether they be federal, private, or state. You know, we have different formulas for coming up for payments, mm-hmm. and in one case, we're looking at areas of the state that don't have property tax. They have other forms of taxation agreements, and now those areas under your amendment that we're discussing here will have require the evaluations, and 50% will be 50% of the increases will be picked up by the by that area, and 50% of the increase will be picked up by the state.
Mm-hmm.
And the last leg, I guess, is that to keep everybody under the same formula would be to look at those federal lands.
Again, federal lands isn't part of this bill.
I understand that. That's why I was asking. I'm going to look at that as the next step so that everybody is being treated equally. That was my question.
Again, I don't know. I'm not interested in dealing with federal lands, or maybe the state assessor could help us.
Steve Van is online. And so, Steve, do you have any response to Senator Hoffman's concern?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, for the record, my name is Steve Van Sant, State Assessor with the Department of Community, Commerce, and Economic Development. The federal land that Senator Hoffman is discussing doesn't go into our formula anyway for full value determination purposes at all, no matter what cycle we're on. Primarily, this bill simply sets up a cycle for us to do the full value, and it also allows us to get some help in order to get those values up. Currently, we're required, I guess, to do it every year, and quite frankly, we just can't do it. Now, what this does is set it up where we visit each school district at least once every 4 years, and we revalue every other year. So it sets a cycle up. It doesn't change what we're doing out there now, and we do not come up with a value on federal lands anyway. So I hope that answers the question. If not, I can certainly try to do some more.
Senator Hoffman?
It partially answers my question, and I'm wondering, is it the intent to move this today, or what was your...
We'll be holding it for one day.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yes. Senator Wilkin?
Senator Hoffman, Senator Olson approached me this morning and would like to get some more information from one of his areas of the state that may be affected. So I asked Senator Green to hold it one more day, and Senator Olson said he would come back to the committee tomorrow.
Thank you. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you for considering the request this morning. As I looked at the CS that was there, obviously on page 2, where we've got the changes that were made, one of the effects that have been not determined and probably will have an adverse effect is in my district where the Red Dog mine is at. And we want to make sure I have Cominco's advice and the effect that they perceive that it'll have on their payment to the schools that are there. And so that's the reason that I've asked for 24 hours to make sure that I get their input on it. And I appreciate the committee considering that.
Thank you. Other questions? withdraw my objection. Does anyone else have objection to accepting the CS? Version G is will be before us, and we will have it back before us tomorrow for final work. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Harris. Did you have any comment? Would you like to speak to it? Okay, please.
So everybody's clear. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is John Harris, representative from District 12, and I support the CS. I think what Senator Wilkin is trying to do is actually enforce what's in law now. Those of us who represent communities who have property tax and who have to have it assessed on a year-to-year basis are supposed to. It's supposed to be the true value of the property is maintained and adjusted on a year-to-year basis anyway. So all this does is say is sort of clarify that and give a little more meaning, I think, to rural, maybe some rural areas who don't have property tax and don't have to, but at least it keeps the true value of the property up to date. And in the case of this bill, which is aimed at trying to help a community of Delta Junction actually give them some assurances that they don't necessarily have to use property tax. If they form a borough, it does show what the property tax value would be in the area. Mm-hmm. And in the Cominco's case, where they do a PILT payment in lieu of taxes, wouldn't affect them at all. I mean, other than the fact that if the property values went up, of course, the payment would have to go up based upon the state's formula, for mill equivalency. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Harris. We now will refer to CS for Senate Bill 171, and again we have a CS before us. Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, I would move the committee adopt and be substitute for Senate Bill 171, version N is in November, dated 13106 as our working document.
Okay, and I'll object just for explanation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had some discussion the other day on this and have made some changes and some additions, and I'd like to first tell the committee what the deletions are and then what the additions are and the line numbers that that correspond with that. Five or four and a half deletions, if we could. There was some discussion the other day about grants versus appropriations. The wording has been returned to the grant status, so any place there was appropriations, it's now grants. And according to the bill drafter, it's transparent one way or the other. The department expressed some concern, and I thought it was a valid concern, that we were asking them to take the applications and sort of do a first cut on them and put their wisdom and rank them and then give them to us. And that put them in a bit of a fix in that they may not in the future know much about the grants at all. And they suggested you're going to have six people that would have visited, that are elected, that have staff, that are very well organized to evaluate this, a very serious issue. And would it not be best to just put the burden of analysis on the committee that's supposed to do it? And take out the department. And the department's function then would be to advertise, train, and receive the grants in a proper form, make sure they're in that proper form, and then forward it to the committee without ranking, without evaluation, whether they're good, bad, or indifferent. So I thought that was a good suggestion. We were probably doing belts and suspenders that really put them in a fix. And so we don't. We withdraw in the CS the authority of the department to evaluate each grant, and we withdraw the authority to rank each grant. So they're now just what amounts to staff or work to make it presentable to the committee.
Senator Bundy has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Wilkins, when you say evaluate, in a broadest term, that means do they meet the qualifications for so really that help me understand, do you want the department to forward every grant, or should they do a first cut as to whether they meet the basic qualifications for the grant?
They do have some basic, you have to have a budget, you have to have a description, you have to do these six things, and so they would have to do a checklist on those to make sure the applications are complete. And they do a education process where somebody from the department actually goes to this area and sits down with each of the communities and explains the format under which this has to be submitted to the state. They've done that for a number of years. So they still have to do that, and it would still have to be in proper order. And they would make the pass on that and tell us that, yes, all the pieces are there.
And so there's some level of evaluation. It's just not ranking.
That's right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Then the next one is, there was some discussion, Ms. Burke, about whether a municipality could apply if they didn't have their paperwork in order. She was correct, so we changed that by a municipality may apply, but it's later on in the additions. A municipality may apply, but grant funds can be withheld if the person that requested it was not current in their audits or their paperworks to account for prior appropriations, prior grants. And then we removed all reference to one-year lapse. There was discussion about lapse dates, and that's fine because each grant carries its own lapse date, and that would be shown in the grants. So that's the deletions. The additions, and I can refer to page and line if you like. The first one, page 2, lines 6 through 24, Senator Olson came to me and had a suggestion that one member of the six be a representative or a senator that represents, in this case, in this particular 10 years, District 40 or Senate District T. And so I struggled with that a bit, but agreed that perhaps the balance between having somebody with boots on the ground experience of that area as one of the six versus the political influence that, in probably many cases, that's simply a no vote. The issue the benefit of having somebody that's from the area as one of the six was valid. So lines 6 through 24 set forth that if on the committee there shall be one person from that area, either a representative or a senator, if the two finance committees, House and Senate, each have a member through the other appointment process, then the two leaders of those two bodies would decide which would serve on the six-member committee. If only one body had a member from that area on their finance committee, either House or Senate, then that person would, by default, be a part of the committee. If neither finance committee had a member of a representative or a senator from that area, then the House and the Senate leaders would get together and decide which person out of the entire body would be appointed to be one of the six. So there would be representation, hands-on representation on the committee, and that's what line 6 through 24 does. Any questions on that?
Senator Olson, did you have a comment?
Actually, thank you very much, Madam Chairman. I want just to correct the sponsor, and actually I'd like to put forth an amendment, is that the idea that I had was that both the representative and the senator should be on there, because in all fairness, the people that will know most about the area and the people that are probably voting yes on many of these impact grants will be the representative and the senator from the area. And so with all due respect to the with the comments made by the there, it was actually, I still would like to present that amendment there, that both the representative and the senator be there. It would be like if somebody from your area that you represent was being evaluated for any kind of grant. For example, Fairbanks. If you didn't have anybody from Fairbanks and they were going to evaluate how much money or what kind of grant was going to be going into, say, the university or something like that, it would be a disservice to people there.
Well, we would definitely not want anyone. Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry.
And so because of that, with all due respect, I would say that, I'd like to make that amendment, have both the senator and the representative on there.
I think that was a nice compromise, Senator Olson.
What's, I'm sorry?
I think that was a nice compromise from 0 to 1.
I think we're, I'm not saying that compromising is the way to go. It's just the most prudent thing to do. And anybody with good judgment, we've got 6 people on there. It's not like it's an overwhelming majority that are going the wrong way. You got 2 people there that are from the area who knows about what's going on there and what impact it's going to have.
Thank you. Senator Bundy.
Yeah, I don't know about the NPR area, but when it comes to the Fairbanks area, I think we'd want outsiders so there'd be more objectivity. So,
I think so
maybe
too.
That mm-hmm. could apply in other situations. I don't know.
Present company accepted. Yeah, maybe would you like to get back to your legislation?
Before everybody piles on?
Yes, please. Please do.
Right, we'll come back to that issue. Senator Stedman had a suggestion that the way it's set up is that an amount of money comes in, and the first cut at that, because of the 1980 law, before it gets to the permanent fund, the first cut is the grants. So the grant money comes out, and there's a remainder. And the current law is 25% of that remainder goes to the permanent fund and the school trust fund. You'll remember that in the CS the other day that we take the gross amount as 25%, and that's what needs to be satisfied after the grants. So if there's enough money to satisfy that 25% requirement per our Constitution, then it's taken care of. But if for some reason it was a short year and there wouldn't be enough after the grants to satisfy the 25% constitutional requirement, then Senator Stedman's idea was to carry that obligation forward to the next year and the next year. So that as the money starts to flow, if there's a debt owed to prior years where the permanent fund wasn't made whole by our Constitution, then that would be the cut after the grants. So it's a look back, and it's effective, of course, with the effective date of this bill. So it just ensures this part that is online, page 6, lines 13 through 16. It just ensures that the permanent fund is kept whole if the monies are available.
Senator Hoffman.
Well, that would be similar to keeping track of how much we owe the Constitutional Budget Reserve account.
Similar to that. Mm-hmm.
Right, $6 billion. Yeah. $12
billion. Let's see. The third edition is on page 6, line 26 or 28. You'll remember we had some conflict and some heartburn last year about listing in our capital budget the actual projects, like we list every other project in the capital budget. This just sets out that each of the grants will be listed individually, just as we do the rest of the capital budget, and that then we won't have to have that argument in the future. And the last edition is what we spoke of earlier, page 7, line 8 through 10, and this just sets forth that the department may suspend new grants if past grants aren't satisfied in regard to their required paperwork and auditing and accountability. So that's the deletions and the additions, Madam Chair.
Are there questions on the deletions and the additions? I know that on we have 3 people online or in the room who have chosen to answer questions. Mike Black and John Grove with the Community and Economic Development. And then in the room we have Melanie Green, who will also respond to questions. She's with the Department of Commerce. Does anyone have any questions for any of these people? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I guess I'm not sure who to ask the question of, whether it's the bill's sponsor or if it would be somebody from the department, but I was wondering, or maybe it should be somebody from the department. I was wondering what the department's attitude was as they look at their powers being taken away for this particular grant program, where I'm sure that they look at, they have other grant programs that are, that they administer, and why they were so easy, why were they were so agreeable to go ahead and allow a group of politicians as opposed to
bureaucrats?
No. As opposed to somebody that may have more time and be used to administering grants out there.
Mike Black, you're online. Can you answer that question for us?
Yes, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Mike Black. I am the Director of the Division of Community Advocacy in the Department of Commerce. Senator Olson, through the Chair, this grant program is certainly not our normal programs. It is a program that requires the department to evaluate not only the grants, but also the application as to impact. And there's where it's certainly different than the grants that we normally administer. Our grant programs normally are very clear cut as to what is a applicable project, and also on what guidelines, whether it's a federal grant that we're administering on behalf of a federal agency, or whether it's a legislative grant or other type of state grant. This program requires the department to not only administer the grant, but also to evaluate each application on what is arguably not always clear, and that is impacts. And that's the distinction.
With all due respect,
Senator Olson,
I understand that there is the difference between the two. My question had to do with why was the department, which is obviously under the administration, so willing to go ahead and, I guess, transfer those duties over to a committee that is dealing with legislation during 5 months of the year, and during the other 5 months, many of the legislators are out there trying to make a living and may not be able to devote as much time to it as, say, somebody that has somebody in the department that would be used to dealing with grants.
Senator Olson, through the chair, I can just state that it's our understanding that, and I don't know if you can characterize our willingness to turn over the program, as much as I understand it, it was a concern of the legislature as to how the grants were being evaluated. And certainly the department finds it easier, if not better, to have the legislature express its intent or willingness to, in the evaluation of impacts with our assistance, than it would be for a review committee of individuals who then would justify that impact analysis before the legislature. So I guess in summary, the participation of the legislature in the evaluation of these impacts certainly is welcomed.
Thank you, Mr. Black.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Dyson, I recall you had some questions for Mike Black from our previous meeting.
Yeah, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Black, I think that what the chairman is referring to was the appropriateness or the legality of funds that were generated from Prudhoe activities being applied in NPRA?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, I believe, based on your questions in the last committee meeting, and as was pointed out by Ms. Burke, I don't believe it deals with the legality issue as much as the program itself was set up to deal with impacts from NPRA, and that's clear in the federal legislation. and the regulations. When we attempt to separate impacts from one area of oil exploration, that is the MPRA area, from the overall impacts of oil and gas development on the North Slope, it is a gray area, there is no doubt. And in fact, what a review committee and certainly what the legislature would find themselves evaluating in this proposed bill would be how to separate impacts from oil and gas in and outside of the MPRA. It is not always that clear. And one of the duties of the committee is to try to make those kind of determinations.
If I may continue.
Senator Johnson.
So, what do you do with the impact of folks living in the MPRA area who are employed at Prudhoe and they bring home their money and, you know, their salary to their home community? Does that ever be construed to have an impact in the MPRA area?
Senator Dyson, through the chair, the impact of employment and the economy as affected by oil and gas activities and employment outside of the MPRA is certainly something that is at work, if you will, in the communities that are eligible for MPRA funding. However, I do not recall applications that I've reviewed or that I know of and have been reviewed that have called that as a major issue in MPRA impacts. I do believe that there has been certainly a argument made that the population changes and the activities from oil and gas, such as environmental activities, environmental issues, and environmental impacts have come up in these applications the distinction between MPRA and oil and gas activities outside of MPRA are oftentimes difficult to separate in environmental and population changes.
Thank you. And just a quick follow-up then. Does a contractor who is based in a community within the MPRA area and does work at Prudhoe, could that qualify as having had an impact in the MPRA area? It's only slightly different than the former question.
Senator Dyson, through the chair, a contractor who would be working in the Prudhoe Bay or other fields outside of MPRA and also working in MPRA, is that what I understand is the question?
Well, perhaps, but is based at in an MPRA community.
Do you mean in living or residing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Senator Dyson, through the chair, I do not recall that argument has been made. However, certainly the impacts in the communities that are designated as being within or in the vicinity of the MPRA have made arguments that the economic activity has been affected, that there are impacts in those communities. Now, they have not necessarily distinguished whether a contractor or some other individual there is that impact is being generated by Prudhoe Bay activities as opposed to MPRA. And I don't know if I'm really able to answer your question very well. Melanie Greer is available there in the chambers if she thinks she can offer any assistance in that question.
All right.
She's shaking her head no. Are any follow-up to that? Senator Bundy had a comment, and then I'll call you.
Well, a question. Thank you, Madam Chair. Please help me understand, if you can. You're talking about impacts, and I suppose they can be positive and negative. If someone has access to a high-paying job and then outside of NPRA comes back to NPRA with substantial income and raises their standard of living, I assume that that's an impact. But am I to understand that then that kind of positive impact, or the fact that a business might reside in NPRA and add to the economic factors of that area, would qualify for a grant because their standard of living has gone up?
Senator Bundy, through the chair, I am unaware. I don't believe that there's any distinction in the legislation that I'm aware of or in the regulations that talks about either negative or positive impacts. It only discusses impacts. However, the grant that would result would have to first mitigate some impact resulting from NPRA, and I have never seen, and I don't believe there has been, any application that has attempted to mitigate the positive impacts, let's say, of having extra income in a community. However, there have been discussions on certainly the increased cost of certain goods and services within communities, which you could draw some connection between having higher paying jobs in a community after oil and gas employment or contracting. The impacts that we see in these applications primarily deal with social, environmental, and as I said, cost of living changes would be an economic impact.
Does that answer? Go ahead.
Yeah, just an add-on. I don't know if the bill sponsor would want to entertain a notion to amend this to discuss only negative impacts, because the notion that someone has more money to spend so they buy more things so the cost of living goes up, that seems a bit of a stretch than to qualify for a grant. It's counterintuitive. We want to discourage people from earning money because it won't have an impact on their community. Never mind.
Thank you, Senator Bundy. Senator Wilkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Black, maybe you can help me with this in response to Senator Dyson's question. And my memory's a little fuzzy, so we'll have to check this out. But I seem to remember somewhere in the revenue sharing formulas or in the when the count is made for the North Slope Borough, that the North Slope Borough, anticipating impacts from Prudhoe Bay and Kaparik and all that development, doesn't the North Slope Borough get to count 1,000 or 2,000 workers as part of their borough population, even though they only go and work in Prudhoe Bay and would never step outside the oil field units? Isn't there some provision that's spread across the whole borough in regard to that?
Senator Wilkin, through the chair, we have no revenue sharing program at this date, and I am not 100% sure of how the populations are counted on the North Slope. Could I get back to you on that?
Yeah, and we'll run down that trail too. It's been a while since we looked at that, but that may be the answer to Senator Dyson's question, and that those kinds of impacts have already been considered and are part of the count when we go to do all sorts of things in the state by headcount. So, but thank you. I have another question.
Senator Wilkin.
Mr. Black, this is the first year since I've been here that the awards haven't been made. By the time we started our consideration of the budgets, if my numbers are right, there was about $5.5 million. This year comes from NPRA, available for award, but the awards haven't been have decided. What is your schedule so that we can build our budgets around what money is left?
Senator Wilkin, through the chair, those evaluations and recommendations for awards have gone and are have been released or are being the applicants are being notified as of yesterday, and we will soon have that information to you and the rest of the committee.
Yeah, and when
and I believe Melanie could certainly give us an update on that, but we would like to hold the letters that will have gone to the applicants until which time they have received them. So that went out in the mail yesterday.
So would it be proper then for us to have a copy of that of those awards?
Senator Wilkin, through the chair, it would be certainly something we will provide as soon as we're aware that the successful or not successful but the potential applicants have received their notification. We can provide that to you as today or tomorrow.
Okay, so it would be all right if I expected that list or the committee expected it by sometime tomorrow, 5 o'clock?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Hoffman.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Susan Burke, if she's online. Is she in the audience?
No, she signed up to testify, and I was just going to call her after we finish questions.
I'll ask at that point.
Thank you. Is there any other question on the topic we're on? Ms. Burke, join us, please. Melanie, have you changed your mind? Do you need to testify yet? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Susan Burke, an attorney here in Juneau, and I represent the North Slope Borough. I just have some very brief comments. I appreciate the opportunity to testify again. It's not really two bites of the apple because we're now talking about a slightly different apple today than we were last week. First of all, I appreciate the fact that the sponsor has addressed a lot of the concerns that we brought to the committee when I testified last time. I guess I want to emphasize, however, that the North Slope Borough's position continues to be that the legislation really isn't necessary for many of the reasons that I talked about. I just have a couple of brief comments. First of all, with regard to withdrawing the authority of the department to provide rankings or specific recommendations to the committee, clearly, Mr. Black, on behalf of the present administration, is indicating that it is not the present administration's desire to give the committee any specific recommendations with regard to particular grants, at least in the form of whether the impacts are real or whether the one grant application is worthier than the next in terms of ranking. When I testified last time, I brought to your attention a provision of the state constitution. It's Article 3, Section something or other. I can't give you the exact section number, but it gives the governor explicit authority to provide the legislature with advice and recommendations on any kind of legislation, whether it's appropriations or grants or anything else. And you may well be withdrawing the requirement that the department provide rankings on these grants, but I guess I would suggest to you as a state constitutional matter that you can't prohibit the department from doing that if a future administration, for one reason or another, decides that they want to provide you with more rather than less advice in terms of the committee's and the legislature's consideration of the grants. And with apologies for not bringing this to your attention last time, because I have to confess this is a sort of second bite of the old apple, of last week's apple, and I had noted it when I reviewed the bill last time, and it just didn't get into my notes for my presentation to you last time. If you look at page 4 in version N, at lines 15 and 20, there are references to the applications for, at line 15, it talks about an activity or service. And on line 20, it talks about facilities or services. Now, courts generally, this issue may never arise, but, and I'm probably being slightly nitpicky, but I always like to have these things as tidy as possible as they're going through the legislature as we can. When courts look at interpreting statutes and the legislature uses different words, the court assumes that you mean different things. And I'm pretty certain that whatever is being referred to on line 15 is the same thing as is intended in line 20. And I guess I would suggest that perhaps that little technicality be clarified, just so that if it's the same baby, you need to call the baby by the same name whenever you refer to the baby in the statute, is my only point. And I suppose, you know, if you want to do that, if you just use the phrase activity, facility, or service in both areas, I think that would probably clarify it. And that's really all I wanted to bring to the committee's attention today, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you again.
Thank you. Any questions for Susan? Senator Hoffman, did you want to ask your question now?
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 7, I know you had a concern on section 10 about awarding of grants, and I think that they were initially, this section was initially addressed on page 3 of version C, that municipalities may not apply, and now it says here that the department may suspend awards or grants. And I'm wondering here if this language is adequate. What if a municipality decides they do not want to pursue a grant and does not proceed with that? Does that mean with this language that they, if the department decided they would not be able be eligible for new grants?
I would hope not. I mean, I don't, this, I suppose, is a question for the sponsor. I can't imagine if a municipality, for one reason or another, decides that, you know, they don't want to continue with the grant, or, you know, the purpose of the grant, the purpose for which the grant was originally awarded no longer exists, that you would insist that the municipality go ahead and spend the money, even though it doesn't make sense to do that. I would hope that's not the intent. I'm assuming that if there's a sort of voluntary application to close out the grant before all of the money's been spent, that it wouldn't have any effect on the ability of the municipality to continue with a new grant. I mean, that to me wouldn't make any sense. I mean, this is a punitive measure. This is assuming that you've got a as I read it, that you've got a municipality that is purportedly actively working on an existing or a previous grant and just simply isn't keeping up with the required paperwork.
And another question, I guess, is that is it inherent in the legislation potential conflicts for funds if, in fact, the state is in need of dollars for specific purposes or trying to build up the permanent fund, thereby more chances of it denying grants for that purpose? Is that a concern?
Madam Chair, Senator Hoffman, it's a huge concern. And it's a very, very difficult situation that Congress has placed the legislature in. You are under a mandatory duty, as a condition of accepting this money. I mean, I guess another, you know, one point that I might make here, there were some comments at the last hearing on this bill, you know, about the state's resources belonging to all of the people of Alaska. The oil that's in NPRA is not a state resource. That belongs to the federal government. And the federal government doesn't have to share a nickel of the revenues that it gets from NPRA with the state of Alaska or anybody else. It's theirs. Congress has, in its wisdom, decided to provide the state of Alaska with a portion of it under conditions. And one of those conditions is that the state gives priority to the in the use of those funds to the impacted municipalities. I mean, we're here arguing about what's impact, you know, who gets what. But is there a tension there? You bet there is. And are we concerned about it? You bet we are. I mean, you've got the permanent fund sitting out there. Everybody loves the permanent fund. At least everybody in Alaska loves the permanent fund. Who wouldn't? Everybody loves the dividends. Who wouldn't? I mean, are there other state needs out there? You bet there are. And there's a huge tension here. But the obligation to provide priority to these impacted municipalities is a serious one. And we're assuming that, you know, as far as we're concerned, the state, since the lawsuit was decided, has done quite a good job in dealing with that tension. But I'll tell you, it's harder for the legislature to do that than it is for a state department to do that. Because you're here representing different constituencies, whether it's Fairbanks or the Mat-Su or Bethel or Eagle River or wherever. So the tensions are even greater when you place all of the evaluation process in the legislature. It's tough. Ultimately, you know, these decisions are reviewable by courts. And, you know, nobody wants to go to court. I hate going to court. I'd much rather come here and talk to you folks than talk to judges, always. But yes, there's a tension. And the obligation on the legislature is just as sacred as it is on the department. And you all know that. I mean, you have sworn to uphold the Alaska Constitution when you take your oath of office, but you've also sworn to uphold the U.S. Constitution and the laws of Congress as they've enacted them. You may not like what they did, but there we have it.
Senator Hoffman, did you have a follow-up?
Not on that, but I do have a question on page 3, line 14. Of the sponsor, I think Senator Bundy had said that language should say each member, and there was no rebuttal to that. And I was assuming that would be a change in the bill. It still reads a member, so just one member of the committee has to go every 3 years. And I was under the impression that, since there was no objection to that when Senator Bundy had mentioned that it would require that each member visit a community, each community in NPRA within a year of appointment.
Where is that, Senator?
Page 3, line 14.
14. Okay. Would you like to make that in the form of an amendment?
So moved, Madam Chair.
So moved. We certainly do. We still have to adopt the SCS.
Okay. Thanks.
And we'll come back to that.
That's okay. It, Madam Chair.
Any other questions for Susan Burke? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And thank you for coming, Ms. Burke. As we look at this drastic change of how this millions of dollars are going to be doled out, what do you see as the problems there that are either not anticipated or the problems that are going to be there now that elected officials with maybe a different agenda would have, as opposed to bureaucrats that are working for a department that are state employees and essentially no agenda?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, I'm not sure I can add anything beyond what I said in response to Senator Hoffman's question. And that simply is, you know, members, state employees don't represent specific constituencies, and the tension between wanting to have extra money left over from the NPRA funds to help out your own district is definitely going to be there, and it's a major concern, and it's something that, you know, each legislator is going to have to deal with. But I guess I would say that having a department make the initial recommendations has a tendency to ameliorate the the impact, if you will, of that tension on the legislature, because you can blame it on somebody else.
Senator Olson.
I guess my real question has to do with, obviously there are going to be impacts there from the development that goes on around, no matter what happens. Is the impact going to be made worse because the legislature now is in charge of doling out these monies as opposed to everybody?
Madam Chair, who knows what's going to happen in the future? I don't think we can predict. Is there a danger that real impacts will be overlooked and not funded? Perhaps. I mean, that's a concern I guess I have to say I have, for the reasons that I mentioned already, that it's going to be hard to fulfill the duty that's imposed by the federal act and represent your districts. Very difficult.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other questions? Thank you, Ms. Burke.
Thank you very much.
Is there objection to adopting version N? There being no objection, version N is adopted. Senator Hoffman, you move your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 3, line 14, I move that the word A be replaced with each.
Is there objection to on page 3, line 14, changing the word A to each? Amendment is adopted. Are there other amendments? Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, I would move that on page 4, line 15, that line 15 read, application is for an activity, comma, facilities, or service that involves planning, etc.
Okay.
On line 20, that line read, paragraph A, all qualifying activities, comma, facilities or services ongoing, etc.
Okay. Is there any objection to the changes on page 4? Amendment number 2 is adopted. Are there other amendments? Senator Wilkin.
Let's see. Madam Chair, move to report Senate Bill 171 to the committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Objection. Will you speak to your objection?
Yes, Madam Chairman. I look at this bill as one that's going to be not just cumbersome, but it's also going to take up time, and I think it's going to go ahead and really divert the attention of what these impacts were actually made for. As you look at some of the issues that need to be even resolved right now, some type of which is not in place, there needs to be procedures and evaluation criteria put in place for this committee, this diverse committee, to go ahead and come together and agree on. As we look at some of the issues in the bill, where each member has to go to the four impacted communities or the communities within the NPRA, you know, I have to admit that I, as the senator from that area, have not on a yearly basis been able to go ahead and be there. And I'm the person that's probably the most transportation oriented here in the legislature. And so with that, I see that as cumbersome. I see that the audit situation is going to be something that is going to be a burden on that doesn't have to be there, as well as some of the other issues that have been brought up. So with that, I certainly object to the passage of this bill.
Other comments? Senator Wilkin.
Madam Chair, I wouldn't want anybody to miss how important this legislation is. This is the only place we can find in our whole state government that anything jumps in front of the deposit to the permanent fund. So to suggest that just a department, or we're going to set up some rules that a department will follow to evaluate something called impact, which to date has not been able to have been defined, misses the point that each of these six people on this committee are going to be asked sometime in a campaign or sometime in a meeting or sometime, how does one place in our state get in front of our Constitution? And we'll answer that by talking about the federal law that was handed to us in 1980 and how we take great time and effort with a special committee to evaluate something called impact. Now, some seem to think that the pressures of the budget or the time of day or the weather of the day would determine whether a grant gets appropriated or not. In the presentation, there's three laws that we have to follow. The committee will have to follow the federal law, the Alaska state law, and the Alaska regulations, and that's shown on slide 25 of our presentation. That's what we've sworn to do, and that's what we will do. Will there be shades of gray? Absolutely, there'll be shades of gray. And the cut will be, are we doing what was told the people of Alaska to do, and that is accept that before you get money in your permanent fund, you have to allocate monies to a certain part of the state for something called impacts reasonably attributable to oil and gas development in NPRA. That's what this committee will do, and it'll do it time after time after time. It'll do it for 40 years. And it'll do it because how important this is. The difficulty here is that we're struggling with, and the reason this legislation has to be put in place today is because we have allowed over the last 20 years, through no fault of anybody's, a system that has been porous at best. The money will now flow from NPRA, and we need, as a legislature, to set the path for the next generation on how we're going to, one, align ourselves with our Constitution and the federal law, and tell the people that put us here why we let one part of the state jump in front of our permanent fund. So that's the reason for the legislation, and the difficulties we face today aren't what we're trying to do, it's trying to reconcile ourselves with what's been done in the past. And better to swallow this medicine today and set the course for the future than to continue to let a system that's surely broken, as anyone, any objective person would look at the past record, would have to agree it's broken. So with that, Madam Chair, I have great confidence in these six people. It won't be an easy committee, but it's probably one of the most important committees we'll have in our legislature. And thank you.
Thank you, Senator Wilkin. I personally want to thank you for the work you've done on this. And having read over reports for I don't know how many years now, I feel very badly for anyone who has to attempt to justify and approve of the current system and say that it's good and that it's done a good job, because I certainly agree with you in saying that it's broken. Any further comments? Objection, we take the roll, please. On the movement of Senate Bill 171 out of committee.
Senator Dyson?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
No.
Senator Olson?
No.
Senator Stedman? Senator Bundy?
Yes.
Senator Wilkins?
Yes.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Four yeas, two nays.
Senate Bill 171 passes out of committee with individual recommendation and accompanying fiscal notes. Do you have any announcements, Senator Wilkin?
No, ma'am.
As we will take a recess until 1:30, we will come back and hear a report on petroleum items. Senator Dyson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In response to our last meeting and the consternation that was demonstrated around this table about the multitude of energy programs going on in the state and are, appears to me, clumsy efforts to bail folks out of difficult situations and a strange way of doing that. My office has been struggling with maybe intent language or qualifying language or maybe defining a mission for some agency to figure out a way to integrate all those programs and rationalize them. And that might be in a bill that could be a personal bill or maybe a committee bill, but we hope to provide before this committee some draft of a plan to go forward here to bring some sense out of what seemed to be a very strange way we have fired shotgun at the whole energy issues in our state. So if anybody's got any ideas on that, we would sure welcome your input on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Bundy.
Yes, Madam Chair, I don't know if you've received it. If you haven't, see that you get a copy, and all members should have a copy. I wanted to thank the department for on our discussion of the energy assistance for municipalities. I had asked a question about our per capita distribution of funds, and within an hour or two I had received a copy of that. Very interesting information, and it really needs to, I think, be included in that bill packet.
Thank you.
If you haven't gotten it, I'll see that you get a copy.
Members would appreciate that. Are there any other comments? Any questions? Okay, we will recess until 1:30 this afternoon.